Hello and welcome to another episode of That Is Life. Today we have a different sort of podcast again. I am talking to one of my wonderful clients as it is her last day of her 6 month coaching journey with me, and I just wanted to interview her and get a feel for how she's found the experience, because I know a lot of people that follow Via Free Fanny are interested in that experience and the food feels and the body feels. And so today we are speaking to my wonderful client Rasheen, who is so articulate and so great and did the work and was very present and aware and got a lot from this experience. And so it was an actual pleasure to talk to her, and I hope that you enjoy the episode. Welcome, Rasheen, to That Is Life. Tell me, how are you feeling today? Considering this is your last official chat with me.
The end of a 6 month era.
What an era.
It's a little bit bittersweet. Obviously, it's amazing to have done the coaching, but it's also sad when something that's been so positive ends. But I feel like it's Friday, so that does help. Feeling pretty good. I've had a really good week. I've had some not so good weeks recently.
Yeah.
But this week's been really good. Just in my mindset, it's not been particularly special. John?
Why has this week not been great? Why has this week been better? Great.
I just managed to keep on track with a few of my non-negotiables, so getting my steps. And I realised that with the change in the seasons, that actually it's not just about getting my steps, it's about getting my steps in the daylight.
Mm-hmm.
Getting my steps in the dark amongst street lamps isn't quite the same. It doesn't do quite the same for my mindset. My steps are obviously part of keeping a healthy mindset. They're time for myself, they're quite meditative, I listen to my book. I realized that trying to get them in sort of past 5 o'clock after my working day has ended actually wasn't working, and I wasn't feeling that motivated or enjoying them as much. So
great.
This week I've made a real effort to get out at lunch, and it's been so much better. Also
great.
Managed a lunchtime bike ride with my dad.
Nice.
Was fantastic. And one of my favorite activities in the world is riding my bike. And I've done a little weights workout with my brand new Kettle Boobs resistance band, which
love.
Are certainly leveled up on the glute exercises, and we were feeling them the next day. It's just been kind of back to where I was in the summer. I think the season change, I hadn't really anticipated quite how much that would affect my my patterns and the things I needed.
Yeah, and I think people need to take on board that, you know, seasons change, life in general changes, how busy you were at work. But at one point you were finishing off your master's. I mean, actually, you know, before we go a bit further and deeper about why you started coaching and how you found the process, tell us like a bit about you, in the sense of like who you are and what you are like and how you have tackled your lifestyle before in terms of how you've wanted to live.
So I am a 30-year-old in Sussex. So I'm really lucky. I live near the coast and I live with a lot of countryside. I'm a really avid road cyclist. That means full lycra. It means being clipped in. I'm one of those. and I have always enjoyed, well, no, that's a lie. I have not always enjoyed exercise. I've not always had the right mindset. I've enjoyed being active. I danced a lot as a child. And as a teenager, I've always done lots of walking. I've always wanted to do that. Got into road cycling in about 2017. Because of my dad, he's an avid road cyclist as well. Dabbled in running.
Dabbled.
And will continue to dabble, but never really fully get past running like 5K, maybe. But I've never, and I started training with a PT before. I had a great experience with that PT, worked on, you know, getting my confidence up, lifting weights in the gym, using the gym and going to the gym and seeing the gym as a place where I belonged. So I've been on a bit of a journey with that. But what hadn't really happened was anything really changing about my mindset and my image of my body. I'm a really creative person. I am a very ideas-driven person, quite a positive person. But when I looked at myself, and I think I had an expectation that my exercise would give me an athlete's figure, uh-huh. or maybe Britney Spears circa 2004's abs. It's been a frequent theme in my journaling on this kind of 6 month coaching. So I just wanted to kind of break that, and it was tiring. I don't think I realized until later in these 6 months just how tiring that rhetoric and that mental work that you do is. Commuted a lot for work, but obviously went into lockdown and continued my full-time job. I just do it from home. I'm very fortunate to have done that. I work as a marketing manager. I work with a great team. I love it. So there was just this funny disconnect between standing in the mirror in my pants and who I thought I was and who I wanted to be.
Yeah, I love that fact that the recognition of the disconnect of like nothing was kind of like matching who you felt like you were versus who you were in the mirror, and then the expectation of who you potentially thought you wanted to be or look like.
Yeah,
I think as well what we often do prior to a lot of this work is think that who we want to be is the same as what we want to look like, and they're separate.
Definitely that is so conflated. I think it becomes almost a crux. And I think as well, you know, I realize this is a podcast and people can't see me. I also felt guilty for not loving my body more. And I could feel that this rhetoric was damaging, but also that maybe other people would question why I felt that way, which obviously you never did. And that if people saw me working out in the gym, getting on my bike, they'd be like, you can't possibly have bad body image, right? Because you keep yourself active. But that, again, that links you to, oh, I'm failing at being a different size rather than I'm succeeding at being active and looking after myself. And I think, I'm not sure, people can really tell what label is in your genes when they walk past.
Questioning or caring? Yeah.
Well, only if they really like the pair of jeans, I suppose, is kind of maybe wondering where you got them from. I am that person who will stop people in the street to be like, babes, where is your jacket from?
I did that yesterday. Someone had on DM boots and I was like, sorry, what name are those boots? Because I know they're DMs, but what are they? And she was like, I don't know, my gran bought me them.
Her gran is a legend.
I know. Tell me a little bit, rewind. So when did we start? April? Or 6 months?
I think it was mid-May, because it was just before my 30th birthday.
Yes, it was just before your 30th. So Roisin, has been following me on Instagram, right? Because we DM'd a few times.
A little bit, dabbled.
You requested a consultation and we had a chat. Tell me what was the catalyst to make you go, right, I want to work with a coach?
I think I recognized that I had worked on the physical stuff. So I'd done all of this work to get more confident and get stronger. And I had gotten stronger, you know, vastly so, you know, being able to lift weights and do an assisted pull-up. I can't do a pull-up, but do an assisted pull-up. I'd made huge strides and I'd started to see some real gains in my cycling as well. I monitor my kind of speed and not just that, but how it felt to do the rides that I was doing. But, you know, I was noticing that evidently that was one piece of the puzzle, but wasn't going to make the whole puzzle. And this kind of, I didn't want to be in that pattern anymore. And I was in a position where, because of lockdown, you know, my kind of day-to-day had changed. Yeah. And I was noticing that the bad rhetoric, the pudgy stomach punishment was getting worse, and I wasn't in control, and I didn't know where to start. I also recognized that in myself, I'm very, very good at starting things. I am excellent at coming up with an idea and getting started on something. I am terrible at finishing it. Absolutely terrible at follow through. And I really wanted to learn some tools to follow through on, maybe looking at my calories, not necessarily doing a diet, but monitoring them, because I'll dabble for a few days of the week and then stop as soon as I've eaten a chocolate bar or something, which I think is something that a lot of people do.
Yeah.
You stop as soon as you give in to something, you know, that you mentally think wasn't the right thing to do, or you didn't go to the gym because you were tired, and therefore that's kind of thrown your whole week. Right. And I was noticing that, you know, kind of more and more. And I thought, well, I resonate with all of your messages on Instagram already. And when you put up with the consults, I was like,
let's go.
Let's do this. Let's go. This is, you know, this is the woman that you want to talk to about this.
Oh, I love that. Oh, stop it. Tell me then a little bit, going to the tracking. I think this is interesting. I don't make all clients track, but I do like at the beginning, ideally, to get just to get a bigger picture of where someone is at. I do ask people to, at least for the first 2 to 4 weeks, track for me. If it's a trigger, I don't, right? But if someone is mindsetly wise in the right place, let's track, let's get a larger picture of an outlook of where you're at, and try and track the feels along with your numbers, right? Which is what we did, your energy, your mood and stuff like that. Tell me, was there resistance? 1, 2, what was different when I did start getting you to track to what you had done before? You mentioned that if you'd eaten a chocolate bar, then you'd stop tracking, or the weekends, potentially, you weren't tracking. What have you learned from tracking, and was it a positive experience for you?
Yeah, so I thought I had tracked before. Mm-hmm. Like, I came into this being like, I've tracked.
Yeah.
Like, I've tracked.
I
had not tracked. I had to go through a full kind of rework of understanding what my portions meant for my actual calories. So as an example, I would track 30 grams of my cereal because that was the portion size in the tracking app that I use, my FitnessPal. And when I weighed it to, because you said to me, you know, we need to be really clear with just information gathering.
Yeah.
And I was actually eating a 90 gram portion. That's 3 times.
That's so interesting.
That's not a bad thing.
No.
That's not a bad thing. No, and that wasn't, it was just like, that is actually, that's actually, well, and what that meant was, you know, in this particular instance, I was getting more fiber in right at the beginning of the day than maybe I recognized. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with a larger portion size because it means different things for your like macros. But I think the fact that we went into this as it was like information gathering, it was understanding where I was. There was absolutely zero pressure to not have things or to have things.
Yeah.
I think that we automatically assume that a diet is going to be, I think we automatically assume that when we start something like this, it's going to immediately start with the restrictions. But actually, and we'll talk about this like a bit further on, and sometimes adding stuff in is hard, and having to work towards adding certain things into your diet is also just as hard. And actually, it was quite freeing in a way to suddenly, I found tracking quite useful because I suddenly felt quite powerful. Mm. I maintain, at that point back in May, I was eating around 2,400 calories on average over a week, I think.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, excuse you, society, for telling me that I needed to eat less than 2,000.
Excuse you
for this automatically telling me that I should be restricting and be wanting to be in this place where that I've evidently not been. You know, the reality of it was I was always eating. I've been eating 2,200 plus calories for years.
Right. But feeling Like, you should have been having less because of society telling you, magazines telling you, people saying, oh, women under 2000, etc. And then you, in your tracker, when you were tracking, always trying to stick to that, then not recording what you were really having because you were trying to stick in this 17 or whatever it was goal, and then not really getting the... And what, for me, what happens is, it's more about what I want, like you say, I want you to have the power of being able to see what you eat, one, the good, the bad doesn't exist. This is about you choosing foods that you eat that make you feel, because I say at the beginning, don't I, like, try and be mindful, choose what you want, and be mindful, and let's see how you feel in reaction to the amount and what you're choosing and stuff. And I think when you are always trying to be in the lower calorie end, because whatever, and you're not, but you think you are, that's also soul destroying.
Right? Yeah, and it gets you into this pattern of like that you somehow think, oh, if I can't do this on this, I need to be lower. I need to be having less. And I think, you know, something for people, if they're thinking of coaching, it's scary having someone look at your food. You know, the idea of somebody telling you to keep a food diary, record all your snacks, or, you know, I'm going to have a little peek in your MyFitnessPal or in your tracker or whatever you're using, is really scary, because food's quite personal. We have food, it is emotional. We have emotional attachments to, you know, there are things that make us think of our family when we're eating. There are things that make us think of our, you know, hungover meals at university.
Yeah.
Food is emotional. So therefore, inviting somebody else to look at your food with potentially a critical eye, I wouldn't say critical is necessarily the right word, but with an objectivity and maybe with some advice, that's really exposing. That's as exposing as taking a photo in your pants. It really is. Having somebody look at the food. And that was probably the thing I was most panicked about at the very beginning, was this, like, not that I knew anything was particularly bad, but I knew I have very strong attachments to certain habits within my daily food routine.
Yeah, and you told
my coffee.
You don't want, I'll let you explain about the coffee. but this is it. You don't want someone coming in and saying, which I think is what people assume is going to happen, oh, that's bad, get rid of it, shouldn't be eating that, you know, and give you these pointers of, to restrict, etc. And I think this is why the first 2 to 4 weeks, especially when you're working with somebody as a coach, is really, it's about trust and bonding and getting to know each other, and for you to know that I am not there to judge what you eat. And in a sense, what I always end up saying is, most of the time I'm like, great, pizza, ice cream, if that's in there, I just want to see that you bloody enjoyed it and that there was no guilt or shame. And that's the goal.
Yeah.
What was the, if we think about any notes or pointers that I gave you?
You gave me one.
One in the whole 6 months.
Well, you gave me a few, but directly related to a specific food. There was one pointer that Danny made. It was incredibly triggering at the time. And I can honestly laugh about it now, where I have a coffee every day, and I was having a latte. I would have a latte in the office every day.
Was he not having a latte? Couple sometimes?
Well, yeah. It was a pandemic. Thanks. You know, we were drinking the coffees. It's, you know, that's obviously quite a milky choice. And you suggested, like, oh, is there another option? Could you have an Americano? Could you have a flat white? And when I first read the message where you said, oh, I've just noticed, oh my god, no.
It's ruining my life.
Oh my word, no. I said, what? Someone's going to take away my coffee. You know, it's something that, you know, when I used to, you know, be in my office building, I would budget for this. You know, I'd be buying this from the canteen, you know, and it's been, therefore, has a lot of emotional attachment. But I had to sort of catch myself and think, do you know what? You signed up for this. Mm. If you're going to quibble out about a question about swapping to a flat white, you know, what's going to happen when you maybe do a deficit, or you maybe get told to change your exercise routine? So change the coffee, small moves, change the coffee. And it was fine. and
you still got same habitual comfort.
Absolutely.
And this is the thing, and I want to make, you know, a point. If you're having lattes, it's not bad. The flat white's not good, etc. It's just enabling. I suppose I want to challenge certain things, little things. For some people, it's been alcohol. For some people, it's been the oil they use in their cooking. And it's not to say you cannot have the latte, which we'll get to in a point, because I think that you make that choice sometimes. It's to say, what you're getting from that food that you're eating, is there a swap that may enable you to manage if you have particular goals, which will encounter an energy balance, you know, factor because of science? Is there a way of managing that without upheaving your life and your food? Like, I don't want to say don't eat the pizza. Potentially it's more habitual things on a daily, like, could it be a flat white instead of a latte? Could it be one spoon of oil instead of three? Could it be gin and slim instead of cocktails, which I, you know, dependent on where you're at in your life and your whatever. And it's just an option. And if you said to me, nope, two lattes every single day, that's my non-negotiables. You put it as a non-negotiable at the beginning? Because I ask you non-negotiables, don't I?
Yeah, it was definitely, I don't think there was necessarily two, but because I don't always have two, but like a daily one. And I think I also had this mental connection to the latte being a good choice because it was quite filling. So there's also links to me not understanding quite the amount of calories that I was eating, because a milky coffee is filling. Milk is filling. Yeah. And I, you know, I tried having like sort of dairy alternatives. I had tried soy to make it more like slightly more proteinous, but it doesn't do my skin any favors, soy. So we don't do that. So, you know, there was also this connection to the latte will make me feel full so I can eat less.
Right. Interesting.
And I think that I was afraid of afraid. And, you know, sometimes I will pick it because I am hungry. Like, and I'm like, oh, the latte will feel really nice and I will feel like satiated from it. Mm-hmm. And that's the choice I make now. I think the hardest place was going to a coffee shop and ordering a flat white in the times when I was ordering the flat white over the latte. Because everyone's got their coffee orders. This is the weird modern world we live in. We like going in and ordering our, like, you know, whatever it is, whether it's chai, whether it's turmeric, whether it's a different milk, whether it's got hazelnut in it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And saying a different order. I was like, wow, okay. I am like emotionally connected to this in a way that I had not anticipated that I would be, and that I don't feel as much, you know, to. Like, I mean, I think one of my other non-negotiables was wholemeal pitters. I mean, my non-negotiables are strange.
Yeah, no. Mine are like French fries or something. And you were like, I remember you put wholemeal pitters and I was like, or didn't you put rice cakes or something?
No, it was wholemeal pitters because I love them. Honestly, do anything with them.
And this is the thing I think to note is that this is, you know, food isn't just about food. It's not just about fuel, and it shouldn't just be about fuel. My feel with you guys as my clients is I want you to feel food as an enjoyment, to experience it, but I also want you to be very aware of the satiation and being full, being satisfied, having your taste buds tickled, getting enough protein to have energy or being full. I have a feeling Rasheen has paused, so I'm...
No, I was just sitting really still, I promise.
Oh!
Joke. Try not to make background noise.
That's okay. Yeah, I want you guys to feel that awareness of how do you feel when you're eating food, and to keep the joy and the experience. So I don't want you to take shit out if it is going to make you feel like me, but also to be aware, is it the coffee or the specific choice that I'm having? Or is it for me, it was going to the news agents every night after I finished my bar job and getting the crisps and the chocolate. Like, it was the routine of that I loved and was connected to, actually more than the food choice itself. And sometimes that
I had so many more than just the coffee.
Yeah.
Like, let's be clear, we haven't got enough time to go over every single food crux that I had. But there was also the chocolate bar every night.
Yeah.
I caught a little bit of chocolate after my dinner. like every night.
And what
to round off my day.
In the sense of you still do things and you still make choices of you eat very much, I think, believe how you want to eat. So what's changed in taking some of those food cruxes out and changing them or swapping them? What's the difference?
I think it's just a, it's being more present to what is driving you to the decisions you're making. And you can apply this to, you know, when you look in the mirror, you can apply this to what exercise you choose to do. And it's, you know, I still have like a bit of chocolate most evenings. Like that's, I don't feel guilty about choosing it. But I know if I didn't have it, it means that it's also okay. My day wouldn't be rubbish. I haven't failed my day because I then didn't have, I don't want to say like enough calories, but actually maybe I just like on other things.
That's all
and
right.
I notice, and I noticed that like there's also you have to be present enough to be like, do you know what, I need to stop eating. Like when you get given food freedom, it can, that can also be really weird, and to be not necessarily gorging yourself, but have this freedom. You also put yourself under pressure to like have the thing, because you've got free freedom,
like,
right?
Yeah, like there's
like have a donut when you would never have had it before. So it you do have to be really present. And I think obviously doing a daily tracker where you look at like your energy, your comfort in your skin, how mindfully you ate, you know, were you present, how much water you had, how much sleep you had, where if you're, you know, if you're female and you have a cycle, where you are in that cycle, all of that data helps you connect to like, okay, yeah, I can start to see some patterns, and I can start to see that because I didn't have a good night's sleep, maybe I'm reaching for sugary foods, but when I have good night's sleep, I'm better. Or when I have more water, I don't tend like it, I tend to be fuller, but I'm then not getting enough in. So it takes a really long time to establish where you're at. And I hadn't anticipated that it would be that long. I sort of like, I knew when we first started the coaching and you said, you know, I coach in this way. I coach, we'll be doing 4 weeks of information gathering, possibly longer before we make any changes. And I was like, yeah, sure. There'll be things that she wants to change immediately. And there really weren't, other than this flipping coffee.
And instead of the change, like trying to change things, you know, I think we slowly built up things like we slowly built up the protein, focused on the fiber, and we focused on enhancing and the steps. I think it was protein, fiber, and steps. And it wasn't forcing you to do steps to just like make sure you get an energy burn at all. It was, you know, you were doing around 5,000. And
on a good day, yeah.
For you, though, especially, it was a mindset set game changer.
Yes, hugely.
Having that self-care. Time.
You know, I do a sedentary job. I sit in front of a computer. That's, you know, there were times in lockdown where obviously I'm only, you know, the toilet is 6 steps away, not half an office away. And there's only one flight of stairs for me to do. So it's, you know, I was doing close to 2,000 some days, and that was really alarming to me. I didn't want to move that little. I was, you know, But for the benefit of like, I like moving, I do like moving as a person. It's that's, you know, I've always kind of done that. And I didn't necessarily need 10,000. Like I knew that was the supposedly magic number that we should be aiming for, or like 20 minutes of activity a day or whatever it is. But it really started to just take me out of my home, away from my laptop. Like, and doing an activity properly, a proper activity, because 10,000 takes a while, takes me an hour and a half sometimes to do it. That's quite a big chunk of my time. So working out how to fit that in. You can always do it, you know, at any time of morning, no matter what you've eaten. I have a few little hang-ups about exercising before breakfast or not feeling full enough and worrying that I'm not fueled enough. I have a few little, you know, hang-ups, you know, sort of around that, around like where I'm at with my energy and hydration,
yeah,
and I'm not wanting to feel sick. So not there, therefore not even being comfortable either. But walking, you can do that anytime. You can do, you can eat whilst walking. It's amazing. So it's like, so actually it's a really, it is really gentle, and therefore it can be quite meditative, and you can find this space, because you're not, you know, if you're not a person, if you're a person who doesn't really like cardio, which I totally understand, that horrible heart rate feeling, that horrible sweatiness. I mean, like, let's be clear, we had a really sunny summer, like the walks were sweaty, but you know, you can do it. And I, when I don't walk,
one can walk if you're able.
And you can rest, and you can chunk it up into like loads of 10 minute walks of a day around the block, which I had to do some days because that was what I've done. I've done meetings where I'm walking, which I don't enjoy as much, but if I've wanted the steps, then sometimes I've done it. I chat on the phone to my mum.
And I think this is it. I mean, for me, your progression has been insane. And look, you know, I love it when people track, because, and I don't necessarily mean numbers, but the feels and all that stuff, because you can then see it, you know, there where certain things, comfort in the skin, going from 5 to towards a, you know, 8, 9, 10 on some days, which was just so lovely to see. But, you know, without that, even just every time, you know, we speak weekly and there's never a not a win. There's always been something, and a lot of it, you know, most of it is such great mindset stuff. I remember one of our first, you know, week, maybe 2 weeks in, you were like, oh, you had some food with a friend and you realized you were ordering the chips because you felt like you should order the chips.
Even though I remember this.
Want the chips, but it's like the social pressure of what you should do when you go and get a burger, right? It was Five Guys, I think.
Oh my God, your memory's good.
I know, right? So I think there was little things like that that were so interesting, things about you realizing your connection to your body and or not, you know, stuff like that. For me, tell me what mindset stuff, like, is there a few pointers for you that you've gone, oh, this is where I was, and wow, this is where I'm at in terms of body image and or food feels, body and food feels?
So body image wise, reflecting on it, it was like my body was something that I was living in that I wasn't connected to. It wasn't really a part of me. And I also gave it all this like sentient power that it doesn't have. So you know, the idea that my thighs would be like, she didn't get out on her bike today, so we're gonna store some fat. Like, what? You know, my muscles they're not doing that. They don't have the presence of mind to do that. Your bum is not thinking, she didn't walk up a flight of stairs, so we're gonna sag. Like, it's not doing that. It's a muscle. It doesn't
hold the fat here.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, she doesn't like her stomach, so let's send it all there. That's just not happening. And I think that as soon as you realize that, and I don't really know when it happened, like, because it didn't happen like in a click. I can't say there was a moment. And I will be, you know, there were times right at the very beginning when I was possibly fronting a little bit, like, I want Danny to think that I'm like doing well.
Yeah.
In order to really achieve this, and I have not come to a complete success, and it'll be something that I work on for my whole life, every day, you have to really do the work. You have to really start to recognize the connections you've made in your brain with certain things, and then allow yourself the time to disconnect from them. The idea that a flat stomach would somehow make me more successful.
Yes.
No, it wouldn't. It also wouldn't change the person who I fell in love with, and that he fell in love with me.
Yeah.
That also wouldn't change. So,
and recognizing the attachment to certain things, like for you, I had the similar, it was cool, right? We felt cool. If we were leaner, flatter stomach, etc., you know, we would be cool. And for us, that's, you know, something that maybe built up right when we were younger, teenagers. And like you're saying, you have
not wanting to be a know-it-all, not wanting to be bossy, not wanting to be trying too hard. I know that's a huge one for you as well. Yeah. And I think that actually there was a turning point kind of middle of the summer where I just felt like, yo, I'm just going to own my space and I'm going to let my body own its space. It takes up a certain amount of space on the planet and that's fine. I'm just going to own my space. I'm going to own all of my decisions and I'm going to own them in front of people. I'm going to start making this like sort of public. So funny that you mentioned the chips. People will not believe me, but I don't really like chips. Unless they're fries from McDonald's on very specific occasion. Right? But chip shop chips, like I'm not into them. I've never been. I'm not a potatoes person. Don't ask. Get me onto bread and then we'll have a discussion. So and I have always put chips on my plate, had chips as part of my order for other people's comfort. So that other people don't comment on my plate. I have some issues about that.
Yeah.
Like they continue to need to be worked through. But I did this little experiment where we had a fish and chip supper with my my partner's family. And I think I was in my deficit. So I knew I was gonna have fish, which was great protein, and I was very excited to have mushy peas. Don't at me, mushy peas are amazing. They're also high protein. As I've discovered, in peas we trust. And I knew I didn't want any chips. I made it really clear that they didn't need to order any for me. I didn't have them. And when we were serving up, they'd got me some and I didn't put any on my plate.
Yeah.
And I got comments like, surely you are having some chips. Surely you will have some chips. And I was like, I don't want them.
You just didn't want them because you don't like them enough.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't even say, nobody knew. When I was in my deficit, actually there were four or five people on the entire planet that knew. That was myself, you, my partner, and my mum and dad, who knew sort of where I was at. So, you know, my partner's family didn't know. So it wasn't like, oh, is this part of your diet? None of that came up. It was literally just me taking a stand for my own place.
Yeah.
And then that led into me getting really like bolshy in the gym and being like, excuse me, I am using that set of dumbbells. Like, no, you may not take them off me. Oh, actually, I am using the bench press. Like, and I've got this many sets to do. You can wait or use a different machine.
You will. Like,
and all of a sudden, I think when you start really owning your decisions and really living in line with the values and the things you really want, getting the steps, you know, having the time in the gym, eating the food that you want to eat, putting what's on your plate that makes you sing, that makes you think, yes, I can't wait to put this in my body. It's amazing what that will do in all different areas. And
being accountable for the shit you want because you want it. And some days that is extra peas and other, I just remember there was a really light bulb moment for you when you ordered a curry. I can't remember exactly what it was. Maybe it was a curry on a Thursday evening or something. It was like, we're having a takeaway on a weekend.
This is that your body doesn't know that it's the weekend.
Yeah. Like your body doesn't know non-nutritious food.
You can have whatever you want on a Tuesday. Your body is not going to punish you for having a takeaway on a Tuesday because it's not a weekend. It's not going to be like, right, store that shit because it was a Tuesday.
Yeah. And having the choice, knowing that you have the choice to do that, because today I just remember, you know, you being like, maybe you were tired, and one day you were tired and you were like, right, I'm having cereal and I'm going to bed. And it's like, because you are accountable and you're making choices, and you know that generally you will eat vegetables and protein and, you know, grains, etc., most dinners, and because you know that you get nutrition, nourishment throughout, and that you are capable of having soul nourishment too without the guilt, it just gives you power to be like, 100%. I'm making
100%
for me, and I know what feels great for me.
Yeah, but being really honest about what that is for you. Like, riding my bike is great for me. I would not necessarily say that it's the best experience for everyone.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is, it's fantastic. But, you know, for me, I need that time. I need that fuel. I'm going to want my workouts to be in line with my rides so that I can make sure I make the most of them. So I'm not going to do heavy leg days the day before I want to go on a really long ride.
Yeah.
But that's an adjustment that I make. That's what I choose. And it's the same with food. I do not choose certain things like chips because I would rather eat a whole loaf of sourdough.
Yeah.
Let's just be clear. It's not some like, I'm not angelic. It's just that it's about you and what your non-negotiables are. And I found we did this exercise where we talked about our ideal life.
Yeah.
And I had just had the day that I did this journaling exercise, I'd had a day that I was having to compromise. I had to compromise when I got my steps. I had to compromise when I ate my dinner, which was like really funny. Like I had to eat it much earlier in the day than I would normally eat. Yeah. I'm a proper like 8 p.m. dinner kind of gal, and eating it at 5 p.m. to be in line with other people was just like, I just finished work. I wasn't ready to eat dinner.
Yeah.
I wasn't psychologically prepared, but I did, and it was enjoyable. And then I wrote this, you know, this list of like where, what will happen in 5-10 years, what my ideal life will look like. And you were really surprised. And it was a really compromised list. I'd really downplayed. I'd really pulled back from wanting these things. So
I said to you, why haven't you got the... You've written a novel. Why is this like? It was so
I was like laid on all this reality that you know, it's that's not how you write down your ideals and your dreams. It's, yeah. You don't apply reality to it. You know, it's good to have a grounding in it, but it's not going to help you. Yeah. And I think that's been a real. It was really interesting. I thought I'd always been a person who was quite driven and had quite clear goals. But to see myself compromising them and to see myself limiting them on a piece of paper, like I literally wrote it down and then was tearful and emotional about it.
Yeah.
But I almost needed to see it. Sometimes you need to see it like on paper. Sometimes you need to write it down. And journaling has been such a key part of it. It's a like amazing what writing with a pen and paper, answering some questions, and I write out the question and then write the answer, will spiral and will do. So, you know, if people are doing the coaching with you, I would say that like, do get the journal or like make a notes page on your phone and type it if you want to type it. If you're a more digital person than I am with my fountain pen and the journal. It's
totally worth it. I feel like most of the work gets done in the journal. Like,
definitely.
We can give you actionables. We can give you, okay, this week I want you to, you know, make sure you get 30 grams of fiber on average. You know, those things, cool. But the journaling, I truly believe the people that journal, and then I've got clients that will avoid it. The clients that do the journaling, honestly, see the most results mentally as well as physically, etc.
And it helps. I think it helped me recognize things. I don't know if you want to talk about my experience of being in a deficit.
Yeah, let's go into that. I just want to just touch on the what was you just saying about
compromises?
Compromise, that's the word. I was going to say comparing. I was like, that's not the word. The compromising. I think what's interesting that us women mostly do, we have been taught very well to compromise the things we want by, you know, whole playing it down, being smaller, you know, oh, we better compromise on the actual food we actually want because we should be smaller, and or we better not take up that much space. I'll compromise.
Oh yeah, make space for others.
Yeah,
you know, compromise to make sure that you've got space for your partner, so that you've got space for your children.
Yeah,
children that you might not even have yet, make sure you've got space for them, because you will have to do shit for them.
Yeah, and I think that's such a big thing. So for you, that realization of people wonder, why am I doing this 5-year plan thing? As an example, for a mindset homework, when you maybe go into this as with body or nutrition goals, it's like all of that stuff is based in all of your beliefs and events that you've created and learned patterns and things that you do. It's telling. If you are compromising in your 5-year dream plan, where else are you compromising in your life? Who are you compromising 100%. For? And that will give you lots of answers about how you see your body, how you eat, how you interact in those scenarios. It's very important.
Yeah, and it helps you recognize that. And the more, you know, the buzz phrase is self-awareness, but the more aware you are of your own self and what you need, you know, you can say self-care, you can say self-awareness, whatever you want to say, but it is, you know, just your connection with yourself, your own thought patterns, whether they be, you know, conducive to your ideal life or not, you know, they yeah. might be swerving you a little bit. You do have to get there. You've got to get there, and you don't have to tell anyone else about it. Yeah. That's the other thing I would say. You know, we live these incredibly, this idea that we have to have this like public life, and yeah. like every single person has to have one. I don't think I've mentioned, like, I'm quite active on Instagram. I quite like it. I don't think I've mentioned my coaching with you
yeah.
because I wanted it just for me. Mm-hmm. And actually seeing something through and keeping it private, those were big steps for me. And actually, you know, I would say to people, like, really look at whether or not you want to be talking about this. Some people will need to.
Yeah.
They'll need to vocalize it completely. I actually needed to be the opposite. I needed to pull it back, and I needed to keep it in a smaller circle.
Yeah. Great. Right. We got around 7 minutes. Me and Rasheen are called an hour every week, and we chat. The first call I think we had was like an hour and a half or something.
I know. I don't know what Jay thinks of me. He must be like, is this woman rabbiting away all the time?
So tell me, we went, I think it was round week 8 or 9. So sometimes people may go into a deficit around week 4. No, actually never week 4. Actually, there's never enough mindset done. But unintentional fat loss does often happen, which it did for you, not necessarily on the scale, yep. but your measurements changed. Not everyone has to weigh.
Yeah, who knew? Home workouts. They can...
home workouts.
Into a competition.
Lockdown one. Now, tell me... We went into the deficit. I was very cautious. I asked you lots of questions about why you wanted to do the deficit. You know, what had changed in the last... Because you came wanting to lose some fat at the beginning.
Yeah.
But you got really good being in maintenance. So there was lots of questions that I wanted to check with you. Like, are you in the right headspace to do this? Physically?
Yeah, it took us about a week, maybe even...
10 days, yeah.
Nearly 2
yeah.
to really interrogate kind of what the drivers were. And the reason I had been really upfront right at the very beginning about wanting to lose fat was because I was like, if you're not honest about this, then what, you know, you're going to feel disappointed at the end. One of the things I think, because we'd gathered so much data, it kind of triggered my curiosity to be like, okay, what would this look like? If I'm at maintaining at 2,400, what does a deficit look like? Mm. And what does that look like for my day? And also, what will happen to my body? And there were some positive things, but there were also some things that I didn't anticipate that, I'm not going to say they were negative, but I hadn't anticipated them, and therefore needed to adjust my kind of thinking. One of it was energy. When you go into a deficit, you will have less energy. So I was noticing my recovery time from my workouts was longer. You know, what I could expect myself to do in a day. We actually adjusted my steps so that if I was doing a bike ride, I didn't get 10,000 steps because I was eating less food. So my body's burning its supplies. Mm-hmm. And therefore that has a big impact. And I had not anticipated that a deficit would have that kind of impact and make me feel that way. And that is something, if I ever did one again, I would need to be really clear about with myself and my expectations for when is the best time for me to do that.
Yes.
You know, this year was fine. I didn't have any bike events to do. Sometimes I set myself a sort of a long distance goal to do, and I didn't have those. So this year was a good year to experiment with it in the summer. But for me, probably won't ever go into a deficit in the summer again. It was also really hard. Being a deficit isn't just about having less. For me, it was also, you have to up your protein, right?
Yep.
So getting myself from 100 grams of protein to 120, so this was what Danny gave me personally.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I sit. That's not going to be where everyone sits. I'm pescatarian, so I don't eat chicken and pork and things. That was hard. That was mentally hard, finding the protein, getting protein in at every time you put fuel in your body, because that's what it came to. That's what I had to do.
Yeah.
I was putting a scoop of protein in my coffee some mornings, and I was fine with doing that because I was on a specific track and I knew it was temporary. You don't do a cut or a deficit or whatever it is. You don't aim for these things forever. I knew it was a few weeks, and I knew I could back out.
Yeah.
And I knew I could say to you,
"We're
done. Tired and I'm done." And I actually did get to that point. There was a point where I was so sick of cooking for myself. Yeah, I think I had a I had a break over a weekend, and I had gotten to the point where I was just so sick of making food.
Yeah.
It was like,
you get to that.
Only through journaling and only through mindset did I know that the thing I was sick of was the cooking, not necessarily the food I was eating, not necessarily the calories I was on.
Yeah.
Because actually the calories I was on, I drank wine whilst I was on my deficit. I ate a pizza, you know, like a whole pizza. I did that in that week. And because, you know, you also realize that you've got 7 days, right?
Yeah.
Like, and there can be days that are higher and lower.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad I did it, but I'm really glad I was kind of present through it. And also coming out of a deficit and trying to get back to maintenance. I hadn't thought about that. I had thought about the going in, the drop, not the come back and coming back to.
You found it hard, right?
A higher volume. I did. I found it really hard.
So it wasn't trying to.
Yeah, fall. And it gave me this real sense of when we see people on Instagram who are achieving these sort of what we may feel is ideal, or you know, they're achieving goals. You know, they're achieving fat loss goals if that's fat loss goal. They're achieving booty gains goals if that's their booty gain goal.
Yeah.
It takes a long time. Because you have to have breaks, you have to cycle through it, and you have to understand, you know, what's going on in your life that's going to be a good time, like, you know, and like you always make a point that it's like, don't do it before a wedding because you're too busy, right?
Right.
So, like, what I learned is don't do it in the summer because it impacts your cycling too much, stay at maintenance.
And like, there was one thing I wanted to pick up on you, which if we were in a call, I would have picked up on at the time, but because I wanted the flow of the podcast, I left it. But you said, I do, you know, if it's fries, whatever, but bread, you know, if it's bread, I'm not angelic, by the way. And I would have pulled you up because I would have said, yeah, because being the person that doesn't eat the fries or the bread, or, you know, has control over that or whatever, they're not angelic. But that is, that's not your fault. That's the society's fault. I remember hearing that Kayla, what's her face, doesn't like chocolate, she said. And I remember being like, see, she is a goddess. She doesn't like chocolate.
I could not like chocolate.
Yeah. That's what good, successful people do. They just don't like the things that we've been taught not to like. So I know that you don't feel like that about food. I know that you don't think not eating carbs, as an example, is angelic. I always say this, you know, it's not me that does the work, it's you guys. I'm there to challenge you and support you. And I feel like, you know, some people go into this and pull back a little bit because it does get, you know, it's work. It's work. It's not like you've had homework every week in the sense of whether it's journaling or thinking about certain exercises, in mindset exercises. You've had workouts to do. We've worked around your lifestyle and stuff, yes, but of course it's still intentional work. It's being intentional, and that takes a lot of headspace.
Yeah, and it's not just, you can't just do it you can't just allocate yourself half an hour. It's all day. When I get set mindset homework, I'll read it and it'll sort of like percolate in my brain, you know, like it'll be there brewing. And then every time you see something on Instagram, you'll question. And every time you read the news, you'll be like, oh. And I saw at the front cover of the newspaper that was like, don't gain weight this lockdown, try this diet. And I was like, excuse you, trying to invade my space.
Tell me what interested you, one thing that interested you the most out of the process or surprised you the most.
The way my body changes within a month.
Mm. The fluctuation, just general.
Yeah, whether that be energy, sleep I need, food I'm reaching for. It's amazing. As a woman, like, we've got this amazing cycle. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Okay, I like it. What was your biggest obstacle over the 6 months?
Being honest and vulnerable and not fronting and saying things that I think you wanted to hear.
Mm.
Like, really allowing that to be pushed aside and not be teacher's pet almost.
Yeah, I like it. How do you feel in your skin now, feels wise?
Today I'm like 9 out of 10. I feel really connected. Love. I don't feel so attached to some of the things I used to feel attached to. Mm. And I feel in control and quite peaceful at the same time.
Mm. What's your favorite soul nourishing meal?
Oh, it's God. Oh, that's so difficult. Because I only have to pick one. I can only pick one.
Yeah. One of you.
So, nourishing meal would be my dad's homemade bean chili with a huge dollop of sour cream.
Yeah.
And my preference is to have it with like broken up taco to eat with it rather than rice and,
ooh,
and a glass of bread.
Love that. Nice.
Yeah.
What is now going forward over the next 6 months, what is your biggest goal? And that does not have to be physical, but just in general, where do you want to feel in 6 months' time? Where? What?
So in 6 months, I would like to feel the same.
No.
I would like to still be able to recognize if something isn't the best thought pattern and bring myself out of it. Mm. I'd like to still be a 9 out of 10 comfort in my skin on some days. Yeah. I'd like to be a 9 out of 10 comfort in my skin every damn day. I'd like to still be owning my space, whether that be space in my brain, whether that be the space I'm using in the gym, whether that be the space I need in my job. I would like to still, and the space on my plate that is allocated to sourdough instead of chips, I would like to still be those things and to have not, and just, yeah, to be where I'm at. It's amazing. When you start vibing on this ideal life, you won't want to let it go.
I bloody love it. I love it. I'm going to miss our call so much. Like, I always just vibe off of a call with a client, even if they've had a, you know, bad week, mainly because there's always this... We always find a win, you know? And I just feel like working with you...
Even feeling bad and admitting that you feel bad is a win.
Is such a win. Oh, it's such a win. To be like, I feel like shit. Great.
I'm going to eat cereal and go to bed.
Yeah. Right? It's the awareness and the presence that you talk about and that, you know, which is why, you know, there's certain tools that have, you know, that help that, whether it be the steps, the meditation, the journaling, etc. Like, I... really appreciate you having been present and being up for the challenges that have been set for you and, you know, doing the work. And I think the work you've realized, as well as I want other people to realize, it's not about perfection. It's not about doing it right. You trust your body. You're eating to fullness to feel good. You're getting your soul and your body nourishments. You know what that feels and looks like. And
yeah.
You've got that data and the information. You can go back and reuse it, pick it up when you want and not. It's a tool. It's not a lifelong, you know, thing for you to do and experience or to control you. You have the power. And also that you'll eat sometimes past hunger because emotion, whatever. And you have this now, I feel the tools and the ability to not feel guilt, shame, to trust what the body does and how it uses it, and to not then go punish yourself in the gym. Like, it's, I just feel that you found such a sense of how you want to feel and who you are, which I think really.
And let's be clear, you know, recognizing that maybe you're doing something that isn't the best thing for you doesn't have to be attached to guilt and shame. You're allowed to be like, I'm not going to reach for that because I'm not going to reach for that because that's not on my ideal life. And, you know, and that's accountability, and accountability is okay.
Yeah, totally. Accountability.
Like, self-care isn't all donuts, unicorns and bubble baths. It can also be like, get up and do your steps in the daylight. Carve that space out because you know that that's better for you.
Yes. Okay. I mean, we could go on.
And thus ends my TED talk.
I love that. I hope that this was useful and helpful to anybody listening, even just to give you an insight into coaching, but more an insight into how we kind of, you know, want to feel and choose a lifestyle that we bloody love. And I think you are a really good example of somebody who has done that work and will continue to, because it isn't just over now that the 6 months is over. Believe it or not, it's a lifelong journey.
I'm trying not to get emotional about this being my last call with you.
I know. It's all right. We're on WhatsApp. I just feel like
return to stalking on Instagram.
We've now bonded. We like Rasheen's renoing our house, and so I will be messaging her every 5 minutes, I think, to be like, can I have some tips, please? What tiles have you chosen? Yeah. All right, my lovely.
Have a great Friday, Danny.
Great, yeah, you too. Have a great weekend and enjoy your...
Don't worry. I got this.
Yeah, you do.
Thank you for listening to this episode of That Is Life. I wanted to share a part of what I do and the job that I love, because this job honestly has been what has helped me through the worst couple of years of my life that I have talked about with you all. Doing a job that I actually like and getting to help women and clients like Rasheen, who honestly have been wonderful to work with, and getting to help with their food freedom and getting them to really cherish their body and be aware of the life that they actually want to live, and to try and reach their goals without subjecting themselves to losing their soul, is honestly part of everything I love about this job and my journey. But I'm just so grateful. I'm grateful for Rasheen for doing this podcast, and I want to apologize for any awful editing that was through the episode. We spoke for a very long time, and I really wanted to get it at least to an hour. So thanks for listening, and hopefully you got something from it. All right, I will see you on another episode very, very soon.